All right, we are live here at 99.5 FM in New York City, WBAI, WBAI.org. We are in the closing days of our winter fundraising drive, but we're going to give you a lot of content today. We have a real good show today, folks, a real good show, especially after what happened in London, the dumping of Vault 7 by Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, which is a bombshell, a real bombshell. We'll have people coming on right now that are, we're going to go right to it. And I'm going to be joined by Tony Bates, the program director for this one, because we have a powerhouse lineup. We really do. We have Ray McGovern. You know, Ray McGovern is the co-creator of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and a founder of the Sam Adams Associations for Integrity in Intelligence. We are being joined as well by William Binney, who, you know, is the subject of an incredible documentary called A Good American. William Binney is a high-ranking former NSA employee, and he is a whistleblower, and he's just a genius. He really is. And he is a recipient of the Sam Adams Award for Integrity in Intelligence, as is Craig Murray, who will be joining us. Do we have Craig? Right, yeah. We don't have Craig, but Craig is, I know, in Montrose in Scotland, and he is speaking at a Scottish Independence Party gathering in Montrose. So we're waiting for him, but we're going to start because we do have such a great group of individuals with us. And I want to thank both of you gentlemen so far who are on the line, and that is Ray McGovern and William Binney. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, good to be back. Yeah.
It's really good to be back. I got to tell you something. I'm watching television today for hours and hours, as they did yesterday, CNN, MSNBC, and they had this guy Michael Hayden on all day long. All day long. That's it. That's the only one. And then even today, there was no mention on CNN, your most reliable source for information and news, did not have anything about the WikiLeaks dump today, which really complicates what's going on already. The, Trump accusing President Obama of wiretapping him, all of the leaks that are coming out. I mean, there's so much stuff happening. You got the deep state versus a potential dick. I don't even know what side to choose here. All I know is I don't know who's being wiretapped, except for I know that I am, and so are you, and so is just about everybody else. So, Ray, are you following the WikiLeaks story here today?
I have been since 10 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what is your overview?
Well, there are a number of points here. Number one is these actions or operations are being conducted either without any adult supervision or with adult supervision. And what we need to do is ask the congressional, well, they used to be called oversight committees, and I call them overlook committees. We need to ask the Senate and House Intelligence Overlook Committees whether they knew about this. Were they briefed on it? You know, it might be a good idea to ask Barack Obama, hey, do you know about this stuff? because it's just incredible. Now, you mentioned before, you know that you're being wiretapped or overheard or surveilled. Well, so are we all. So when Donald Trump says, yeah, I've been surveilled by Obama, well, you know, that's a big deal, but he's just like everybody else. They're not going to carve out an exception for a presidential candidate, are they? So this is, Bill can talk to this better than I, but it is just short of incomprehensible or unbelievable that they can, and they do, intercept all this stuff. Now, last thing I'll say here is that I noticed that yesterday, Scott Horton, a prominent lawyer in New York, was on Amy Goodman with Robert Perry, the arch investigative journalist who broke Iran-Contra and many other stories. And what Scott Horton, who should know better, says is, they only collect, the who's talking. They don't have the substance of these conversations. Well, if he doesn't know that all this stuff is being stored, all of it. So, all you have to do is have a computer and you have these little keywords. Let's say Trump, Putin, Moscow, Kremlin. Out it shoots, all this stuff on whoever. Now, Bill can talk more about that, yeah. But it's not at all unbelievable that that Trump was included in all this. The exaggeration, of course, is that Obama authorized this specifically for Trump. It may be the case that Obama authorized none of this and that he didn't even know about it. Last thing, the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, said to, that interviewer there on MSNBC?
The woman. Chuck Todd?
Woman.
Oh, yeah, Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, he says, hey, Rachel, I thought, and this is pretty much what he said, I thought that that Donald Trump was smarter than to take on the CIA. This is public, right?
He says,
they have 6 ways to Sunday to get back at you. And, I thought that Donald Trump, being a smart businessman, he would know better than to take on the CIA. And Rachel Maddow changes the subject. If I were Rachel, I would say, do you mean that everyone should be afraid of the CIA, including the incumbent president? And the answer would have been, yeah, I think Obama was afraid of the CIA. And I think they're trying to make sure that, that Trump is also afraid. Will be interesting to see how he reacts to all this.
Yes. William Benny is on the other line. Before we go to you, William Benny, you were just in Italy where they showed A Good American, I believe, in Rome. And I got to tell you, for this station, we are in the middle of a fundraising drive. That special program that we did, which included Ray, included Fritz Moser and others, Thomas Drake, who I'm going to quote here in a second, that has done so well for the station. We've played it 6 or 7 times. So it's been a huge boon. A lot of people are taking note of it. They're getting the DVDs, and they're going to be watching it in theaters. I'm sure it went well in Rome. We're going to play the trailer. Do you guys, and then we'll get back to you. We're going to play the trailer. I just want to, put this back in people's minds. A Good American. This is A Good American. If it's in a theater, wherever you are, you must watch this film. And it's about William Benny. And you guys just hold on here. We're going to play this 2-minute trailer, and we'll be right back with you. Okay?
Recapping now for you once again, an explosion underground in the garage section of the World Trade Center in New York City.
The first attack on the Trade Center in 93 was the first thing that woke everybody up in terms of the threat of terrorism.
We said, this is not a one-time event. There is a larger movement here, and they're planning on doing more.
The terrorists were burying themselves inside the ballooning communications network and the internet and the phones, and so we had to figure out who was communicating with whom and who were the terrorists, and that was the whole idea of the Thin Threat program.
Of all the analysts, Bill was by far the most astute.
He was the person in the agency who knew the most about metadata.
It was pretty clear that we were building the most powerful analysis tool that had been developed in history to monitor basically the entire world.
This little research organization had the keys to NSA's future.
We let it run 24 to 36 hours. We discovered critical intelligence that had never been discovered by NSA. NSA's response completely shut the program down.
Does anybody even recognize what they have?
Oh, my God. The whole tower collapsed. It is gone.
We would have caught the people. 9/11 would have been avoided.
They're taking data on every U.S. citizen in the country. That's not compatible with a democracy. It's like the Stasi on super steroids.
What's wrong with this picture?
9/11 is a gift to NSA. We're going to get all the money we need and then some.
It wasn't about making money. It was about protecting the country and the free world.
Let's find where the skeletons are, capture it all, and then bury the report as deep as possible.
The FBI decided to raid 4 people. Fabricated evidence to get a warrant. They were after all material that was related to Thin Thread.
It was the largest failure in NSA history.
Wow, that is a powerful trailer, and it is a great film. I've seen it many times, including in the theater with William Benny. Welcome back to the show, William Benny.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Randy.
All right. So I'm wondering why you and Ray and Craig and all the others, Thomas Drake, haven't been invited on these shows to comment on what's going on over the past couple of weeks. And, of course, the bombshell that was dropped by WikiLeaks today. I would think that they would go to somebody who knows. You know, they would go to you instead of having an echo chamber in those little panel discussions that they have on both big news networks. And it's like, especially Michael Hayden, who Thomas Drake said, Michael, raw executive authority Hayden is often rolled out as talking national security head to provide cover for their deeper state secrets and deflect from the uncomfortable shadow mass surveillance realities. You agree with that?
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, they trot him out because they don't want to hear any alternative to the narrative coming out of the administration and the agencies involved. I mean, that's the whole point. As long as they can keep limit any knowledge of what's going on in reality and the truth about it, then they can spin it any way they want and keep the masses of people in line, you know, and keep them doing what they and lining up and supporting what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's also true of Congress, by the way. Congress doesn't necessarily know all this stuff either.
Does anybody know what's going on? I mean, I am so confused right now.
Yeah, I wanted to add something to what Ray had said about the Trump Tower and the tapping, if I could. It's not that point that Obama would order a tap, because he's always got the taps are always on everybody, and NSA is accumulating that data. So all he's got to do is order the targeting of Trump. So he'd have to say, "Go get me the data on Trump."
He doesn't.
That would be what he'd have to do. So then somebody would have to go into that database and pull all the information on President Trump, or President-elect Trump, or candidate Trump, whenever the time period was that they looked at it. I mean, I think they had evidence even before when Hillary sent a tweet out saying that, you know, this was before the election in late October 31st, I think it was, that the tweet came out from her saying that the computer scientists have found a server in the Trump Tower that was connected to a server in Moscow. Well, I mean, you know, that kind of leak and connection doesn't come from, you know, individuals that aren't part of the government are looking at those kinds of networks around the world. So, you know, somebody even back then was tapping into that system, and just that fact that that kind of information was given to Hillary to spread around in a tweet says it right there. I mean, you know, plus all of the conversations of the president now, President Trump, that have been released, like with the president in Australia and also in Mexico. I mean, these are things that are captured by NSA all the time on everybody. So that kind of data is there, but you have to have somebody go into the database and target it to pull it out to get it and share it with people. Now, the one thing I would say that the latest release by WikiLeaks of all this material from CIA offers some other alternatives too. Because it appears very much like the, you know, they have over 700 million lines of code of attacking capability.
What does that mean, by the way? What does that mean, 700 million codes?
Well, a line of code is like a line of instructions in a computer program. So I mean, you know, you could have maybe 10,000 lines of code in a program that does an attack on a given system. Yeah. So that's really what they mean. But they're talking about 700 million lines of code. Now, that's the kind of data that they get from sharing from NSA and GCHQ and other countries that are cooperating, plus, you know, probably breaking into other countries' things and stealing their attacks, you know. So it's a matter of, I think CIA kind of corralled all these attacks and kind of pulled them in and created their own little cyber attacking capability. So that's what that appears to be to me. Which comes back to me and says, okay, that also means that CIA could have hacked in and left traces that looked like it was Russia that did it, either in Hillary or Podesta's server or any of the others, and also could have hacked into to the Trump Tower. And if they're really smart about the software, they could have made it look like nobody actually did anything, you know.
Well, it says
so. It offers them up as an alternative for this alternative source for all of this information being leaked.
I got a bullet point analysis of some of the stuff that the implications. One of them was that the CIA, it says CIA deliberately mimics the hacking protocols of Russia to obfuscate their own hacks. Is that possible?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's basically.
That's basically your premises. You agree with that?
It's certainly a possibility. I mean, you can't now discount that. Right. Yeah.
Another one here is the CIA had espionage. It's had an espionage division more powerful than NSA with no checks and balances. Does that make sense to you? Is that possible?
I wouldn't say more powerful. I think they are leveraging some of the work at NSA, which gives them equal capability. I don't know that it means they're more powerful, but certainly they aren't. They don't have the constraints that perhaps might be levied on NSA.
Wow! All right, we are being joined right now by Tony Bates. Before Tony Bates, he is the program director here at WBAI, and we are going to be playing some archival audio clips from over the last 60 years. This is listener supported WBAI. It has been for 60 years, part of the Pacifica Network. Ray McGovern, how important is it to have a listener-supported radio station here in New York?
Well, as you pointed out, Randy, Bill Binney, who knows more about this stuff than anyone else on the planet, is the last guy they want to hear from. Michael Hayden? Oh, man, he's terrific. Now, who's Michael Hayden? Well, he was head of NSA when a wonderful program was developed. But it only cost $330 million, and he was offered $3 billion. And so even though the first program worked beautifully, he chose the second to get that budget increase, and the second didn't work at all. It had to be abandoned. Bill knows that better than I. So Michael Hayden is a very curious fellow. When he was finished doing his stuff at NSA, they needed a new director for the CIA. And wonder of wonders, Michael Hayden, for services performed, was picked to be the new CIA director when Portugas left in disgrace. Now, we're talking about May of 2006. Why do I remember that? Well, that was the month that I challenged Rumsfeld in Atlanta and got... And nothing else happened that day, and so even the networks and the cable TV had me challenging Rumsfeld. Lou Dobbs calls me and says, "Well, Mr. Govern, I'd like to have you on my program up here in New York." So I go up to New York, right, and I'm sitting in the anteroom and waiting to go on to talk about my challenging Rumsfeld. And who comes in but the former head of NSA and deputy director of CIA, Bobby Ray Inman, who has an incredible, incredible reputation for being the real straight arrow, okay? Now, I happen to know that two nights before that, at the New York Public Library, he said, Michael Hayden, he clearly violated the law. He clearly violated the Fourth Amendment. I mean, I know because I helped to draft the FISA law, and what he did was illegal. Okay, so... He appears all of a sudden as I'm waiting to get in to see Lou Dobbs, and he's, you know, he sort of doesn't have a tie on, and everybody fawns over him, puts a tie on, and then he goes in before me, and I'm watching the boob tube. And Lou Dobbs says, Michael Hayden, he's up for confirmation as head of the CIA. What do you think?
And Bobby Ray Inman says, perfect selection. Just a real specialist, full of integrity, a great guy, see? Now he comes out, and I say, hey, Bobby, what about what you said 2 days ago? And then Lou Dobbs says, well, come on in, McGovern. So I would have chased him out of the, you know, this is what I'm trying to say here, is that you have a special level of blessed people at the top. They protect each other. And Michael Hayden was allowed to become head of the CIA and at a time when torture was going on. He said all that kind of stuff. And another head of the CIA had said that Michael Hayden should be, his name was Odom, Bill Odom. He said Michael Hayden should be court-martialed for what he did, and he and the president should be held accountable. So what we have here is kind of a joint exercise by the CNNs of this world and the Michael Haydens of this world to disguise what we would be able to hear from Bill Biddy.
Well, we are here and we are open. We've had both you gentlemen on a number of times, Ray. I think you're going to be getting residuals from us real soon. But I wanted to ask Bill Biddy here, Bill Biddy, about the what Drake had said about Hayden and other things that he had said about Hayden and what your overall assessment is. He says that if it weren't, in that trailer, he says that if they had listened to you, there would have been no 9/11. And a lot of people agree. Nobody's asking Hayden that on television. William Biddy? Do we have William Biddy?
I couldn't hear you there.
Okay.
Randy, could you maybe turn up your volume too?
I couldn't hear myself as well. They all agree in this documentary and many others that if they had listened to you, if they had used Thin Thread, if they had used that, they would have been able to capture those transmissions and wire transmissions or Signet, whatever, and they would have been able to stop 9/11. If they had listened to you, and I want to know why do you think they never asked Hayden that when that information is out that Thin Thread would have saved the day?
Because it would be too embarrassing a question to ask him and put him on the spot to answer up for why he canceled the program and didn't just use it as even a risk mitigation and implement it and use it temporarily until the other program could come online and do better, if it ever could. Well, eventually, of course, it never did, so... But the point was he could have had it running as a risk mitigation at a minimum, and it would still have worked and been able to stop 9/11.
Well, this is Tony Bates, Mr. Biddy, the programming manager here at the station, and I'm wondering if there are indications that the decision to stop the use of Thin Thread seemed to come directly from Hayden, or did they seem to come from above his pay grade?
Well, we knew, for example, that the companies that wanted to feed on the Trailblazer billions were in Congress lobbying the intelligence committees to get the Thin Thread program canceled because they didn't want any competition. You know, they wanted it out of the way so there wasn't any competition and the money would flow to NSA and they could feed on that in contracts. So we knew that. But inside NSA, I mean, the decision was still up to Michael Hayden to make. It was his decision.
So the bottom line is that he made the call. And what is in fact, we learned in the movie that after the fact, after 9/11, and when you and your colleagues got back to your information, that there were other planes, in fact, that the terrorists had attempted to hijack. And you had that information as well. They were not successful. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, see, I wasn't there at the time. I'd retired and gotten out because of what they did was start spying on everybody in the United States, so mm-hmm. I couldn't be a part of that. And I could see that what they were doing was going after everything in the fiber network in the world, and they were starting with the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So we were first in the pit because we were the closest, right? So, and they had the companies in the U.S. That's why the telecommunications company had to get retroactive immunity because they were using the telecommunications companies to support the acquisition of all this information on U.S. Citizens' communications. So that's why they had to get retroactive immunity for all those crimes they were committing. So that was the main point that I had a problem with. But I wasn't there when Tom Drake ran the program after 9/11 in February of 2002, I believe he did this. And he found all the data that was there that they didn't even know they had. And he was the one who said there were other planes that were going to hijack and so on. Mm-hmm. But you see, I didn't have any knowledge of that because I was gone at the time. So that was really basically information that came from Tom Drake.
Right, and who you'd worked with previously.
Yeah.
One of the other items that really struck me from today's drop was I remember a story a few months back about whether or not there was a court case about whether or not the government should be allowed to hack iPhones, or could they get into them, or how safe were they? But according to this drop, they had already infested iPhones with malware that could spy on everyone. Can you speak to that, or is that a part of the knowledge that you have here? That's a part of what came out in the wiki.
I could hardly hear you there. Could you turn up the volume a little bit? And
absolutely.
Maybe repeat what you were saying, because I lost you there.
One of the drops in today's release is that the iPhones and other phones had been already infested with malware that allowed the government to spy on us. And now I'm a person that barely believes anything on television. I saw the recent case where there was a tense back and forth about whether or not governments should be allowed to hack iPhones, or could they, or how safe was it. But it seems from this, they had already had access. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, that goes back to, if you recall, about a year or two ago, GCHQ was exposed for stealing the SIM card information off some of the companies that were producing it. They were stealing records of billions of SIM cards. What that means is they're taking the identification indicator and the equivalent access code for that SIM card. So that means that when they put that SIM card in a phone, and then you turn the phone on and it connects with the network, It gives that kind of information to the network. It gives the identification, and then they know the access code and can get in through the network to that phone. So that means that when they have these billions of SIM card equivalences, all they have to do, they've got all the access codes for the phones whenever you log on to the network anywhere in the world. So that means they can go across the entire network down to your phone and load anything they want, drain anything you want off those phones, wherever you are in the world.
In other words, that story about whether or not we could hack or hack iPhones was fake news, apparently.
I want to go
whether or not I would say they could that was they could hack iPhones and other phones too. In fact, if you looked at, if you've been following some of the investigative powers bill in Britain when they were passing it, uh-huh. they were talking about bulk device attacks or mass device attacks, and that's really what this is. It's like attacking every iPhone in the world.
Will this new information change anything, and is there a way for the layperson or anyone to protect themselves from this incredibly oppressive surveillance system that we are under? Big Brother really is at work here.
Yeah, it's really difficult for individuals to do it. I mean, it's even difficult for smaller countries to do it. So, see, the problem I had with this all along is that the fact that NSA and now, of course, they have large numbers of attack software to go at zero-day errors or zero-day built-in flaws in the software, or even, you know, have other kinds of recognized, or they've developed software to penetrate other firewalls, operating systems, switches, servers, and networks, and have had this entire list of all these attacks. And they keep them, and they keep them secret from everybody, because that means that they could read, they can break in and read whatever you're doing anywhere in the world. And so that's something the operations side of NSA or operations side of CIA would like to keep secret, so that they can continue to read what everybody's doing. The unfortunate part about that is they're not the only ones that have smart people, which simply means that, you know, other people can find these errors too. And so when they do, you know, they penetrate people like, you know, over here, the movie industry or any or OPM or even CIA, okay? So
wow.
the point is, they knew about these weaknesses but never fixed it. So they left us all vulnerable, you know, to be attacked and broken into and have our data stolen, and they knew it. And so that means to me that every time there's a cyber attack and they come around asking for more money for cybersecurity, they're actually swindling you, because it's a fundamental swindle. They already know the weaknesses. Why don't you give us some cybersecurity and fix the weaknesses you know? Do that at first and see how well we're protected at that point. Then if there's some break-ins, you know, then we'll give you some money for cybersecurity. But until you fix the problems you already know about and have known for, you know, a couple of decades, by the way, then you're just pulling us along and swindling us.
That is a really powerful point that you make there. And from my perspective, the media is used to create that fear. And then the general public, once fear, they jump in and they will give that money or approve that their congresspeople and senators vote for those kinds of bills that spend that money under the impression that they're actually changing something when, in fact, the government has all along been able to get inside of everything that we're doing. I'll tell a quick personal story, and it is that I doubted a news story once, and I posted my response on Facebook. I heard a story that I thought was absolutely bogus. It was a commercial, and I could tell that it was a commercial, and a celebrity was involved in the story. And I posted that on Facebook and argued vehemently against the idea that the media was putting forward. Within 2 hours, my Facebook page was shut down. My computer was attacked. My ability to copy and paste was taken away. I was very close to the Occupy Wall Street movement here in New York, and I was, to this day, I can't post on their page from any computer. When I log in from my Facebook page, I can't post to the Occupy page. That was blocked. Several things that I did online, it was astonishing how quickly that happened. I refer to it as having made the Matrix blink.
Yeah. Well, you're included in the in crowd now to be targeted, that's all. You were an Occupy Wall Street group, so it's like the Tea Party, too. They did that to them, too.
I was sitting in a bar that we used to call Leisure Caucus at Occupy, and a bunch of our phones began to text each other. My phone texted 6 Occupiers, but I only had 2 of their phone numbers.
Ah.
Yes, and their
well,
phone
there, number. There you go. See the place where they have all the phone numbers is NSA, for example.
We are talking with Ray McGovern and William Benny. Ray McGovern is a longtime CIA analyst. He left, I think, in 1992, he got this huge award. He said, I don't want this because of the torture that was taking place. He gave it back to Pete Hoekstra. Pete Hoekstra himself was recently caught on a surveillance apparatus somehow, and he was very upset. He is all in support of mass surveillance. And suddenly, Ray McGovern, why do these guys get so upset when they're targeted under mass surveillance?
You mean like Donald Trump?
Trump?
Allegedly.
Or Senator Feinstein.
Senator Feinstein.
And Harmon. Gene Harmon.
Gene Harmon,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have to go behind the play-by-play here and ask the question, fundamental question, who's in charge here? Is Chuck Schumer right in saying that it's very dangerous to cross the CIA, that they have 6 ways to Sunday to get back at you? Is he afraid of the CIA? Well, I've been saying for years that Obama was afraid of the CIA, and I have proof of it. Let me explain. We talked a little bit about retroactive immunity, right? This had to do with the giant telecoms who were breaking the Fourth Amendment willy-nilly under the direction of Michael Hayden, and the question came up, whoa, should we prosecute these people? And the idea was, no, we'll give them retroactive immunity. Now, Senator Obama said, this is crazy. I'm not going to vote for giving any of the telecoms retroactive immunity. He said that in May 2008. In June, John Brennan joined the Obama team. The first day of July, Obama said, you know, I changed my mind on prosecuting the, you know, giving, I think we ought to give retroactive immunity to the giant telecoms. Why don't we do that? So this is June now, 2008, 1st of July, he changes his mind. Now, what's my point here? My point here is that Obama was given to believe that it was not a good idea for him to, well, as Chuck Schumer says, get crosswise with the CIA. Who becomes a big deal in the White House? John Brennan. Who sets up this cyber center? John Brennan. The only thing wrong with it is, lots of things wrong with it, but what's really curious is that these guys are really good about attacking things, about getting information on them. But, you know, as far as defensive measures, they're a bunch of hacks. if they spread this information around to, 100 contractors, one of them is going to have a pang of conscience. One of them is going to read the Constitution and, like Ed Snowden say, this is really too far. This is turnkey tyranny. I'm going to tell Julian Assange, and that's what happened.
Well, they were in unison today, both Assange and Snowden. They've been tweeting out, and I think what he did today was a major revelation. And I want to go to, this is the CIA. We're talking about the CIA here. We are in the middle of a fundraising drive. We are offering today the Pacifica Archives, 1,350 hours on a thumb drive. And we are going to play just a two, it's germane to this program, just 2 minutes, someone that you knew, and you, we can talk about him in a minute, Ray. We're going to play this from 1975. It's former CIA Director William Colby in front of the House Intelligence Committee. And we'll be right back. Just, we're going to play like a minute, minute and a half of this. All right, you can comment.
When did you last have, and I'm going to withdraw that, do you now have people who are being paid by the CIA on anything which you referred to as a major circulation American journal?
We have no staff members of any such major
general.
That was not
the question. The question was, do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to anything which you called, quote, a major circulation American journal?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we do. We have some who are in the category of freelancer or stringer or something of that nature abroad, individuals who are not considered a part of the staff of that journal.
I'm not going to ask you the names or the numbers. I am going to ask you this, however. Do you have any people who are on the staffs of major circulation American journals without who are contributing to major circulation American journals, who you are paying without the knowledge of the management of the major circulation American journals?
Yes, we do. Stringers who are submitting occasional pieces or frequent pieces to various journals, that we have not told the management about them, but they are considered as non-staff members of that journal. They're independent contractors.
Do you have any people at the present time who are paid full time by the CIA who also write for major circulation American journals?
We do have abroad some of our employees who are paid for their services by CIA who also submit pieces occasionally. It's a very small number, but we do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session. I think if we begin to break the question down into the component parts, we begin to focus things a bit.
Well, when you refer to major circulation American journals, are you referring to both written media and visual media?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry, I should have made that clear.
All right. do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the national news services? And by that, I'm referring to AP and UPI.
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
Mr. McClory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to...
All right, that's from the Pacifica Archives, and it's part of what we're going to be offering in a few minutes. William Binney, Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern, we don't seem to have an aggressive intelligence committee like that today, either in the House or the Senate, that would be that forthright in those questionings. What has happened?
That's quite true, Randy. What the Church Committee set up, or the outcome of the Church Committee, was the FISA law, which prohibited intrusions on the privacy of U.S. citizens, and the creation of the so-called oversight committees, which I have already called the overlook committees. Now, over the years, the power of those committees has eroded. They have been kind of stripped of their real energy and power. And what the CIA and the others do is go to the leading members of both houses and the chair of these committees. And these chairs really are doing the CIA's bidding, if indeed they're told about it. Now, with respect to Bill Colby, I know I worked directly under Bill Colby. I admired him greatly. And when Henry Kissinger told him to lie to Congress about what we call the family jewels, you know, the drugs that were administered to people, the shooting or the revolvers that were going to kill Castro and all this stuff, Bill said, look, I'm a lawyer. I'm an attorney. And I'm not going to lie to Congress. And long story short, Bill Colby was not only fired, but he met a very suspicious death after a few years. I don't exaggerate here. It was a very suspicious death. I was overseas at the time, but I remember thinking about that. Now, what am I saying here? What Colby also said, or is quoted as having said, is we CIA, control about 90% of all the important people in the media. Now, that quote is not very well sourced, but the following quote is excellently sourced because I know the woman who was there when he made it. Bill Casey, who was Ronald Reagan's CIA director, said, and I quote, "When we have persuaded the American people to believe everything we want them to believe, we will have achieved success." And that's when this thing went on steroids. This is when they built up this network for information and disinformation. And just bringing it down to today, you probably realize that lots of people, including some of the big stars, are afraid. Now, how do I know that? Well, I know that just generally, but after I challenged Rumsfeld on the 4th of May, 2006, and caught him by quoting himself back to him and got him lying, I'm leaving this amphitheater from this well-heeled southern think tank, and I get a call.
Mr. McGovern?
Yeah?
This is Anderson Cooper. I'd like to have you on my program tonight, but I don't know how to... I need to ask you a question first. I said, sure. I said, what is it? He says, weren't you afraid? Now, you know, I was sort of in shock because it was a real big deal. And so I said, no. Yes, it's a normal question. I said, no, I had brief Secretary's defense before. I really wasn't afraid. And then I thought, wait a second. There's Anderson Cooper, pretty boy on CNN, heir to the Vanderbilt fortune, for God's sake. He's not going to be out on the streets of Atlanta with his hat out. And so I said, Anderson, let me be really candid with you. You know, I had done my homework. I knew I wanted to ask him these questions. I got the opportunity. You know, it's a real high, Anderson. You might try it sometime. do your homework, ask real questions. You'll find it's a real high.
He says, very well. He says, well, I'll have my people get in touch with your PO. I said,
no, Anderson, don't do that. I don't have any people. No people. Just call me back on his number. It was such a revelatory thing, you know. Now, Anderson is not the worst of them by any stretch, but he asked me, you know, little Ray McGovern, wasn't I afraid? Because why? Because he's afraid. Because they're all afraid. They're going to miss those three or four, whatever, $1,000 salaries that they're getting. And even if they don't need it, like Anderson doesn't, this is a big prestige thing. And that's what has become of the major media. And that's why it's so important to have a program like you guys have. Because nobody else has Bill Binney or me or anybody else who knows what SCORE is on, because it's not really corporately a good idea. So thanks for having us on.
Could I add something here? All you have to do is reflect back on J. Edgar Hoover. And J. Edgar had stayed in power at the FBI for about 40 years. And he did that because he had all the dirt on everybody. So and now it's not a question of just looking at the members of Congress or the judges or anybody in the White House. It's they're looking at everybody in the country and around the planet. So basically, everybody should be afraid of this, and that's how they have information and try to embarrass President Trump, for example. That's just the way these kinds of things work. It's having information on people is power, and sooner or later, people use that power.
They had information on Obama, too, for the last
yes, they did.
8 years. And yep. They seem, in this bullet point...
In fact, can I add something here, Randy?
Yeah, please.
Russ Tice, who was also a whistleblower from NSA early on, has said that he has seen transcripts of Senator Obama's conversations on the phone inside NSA. So, I mean, you know, that's telling you that, you know, that's just the part of the program that's been ongoing for, he said that about 2003 was the time frame I think he was talking about. But, I mean, it just is it's the continuation fundamentally of the programs that went back basically to all the way back to World War II, you know, even including the Minaret program at NSA, Chaos and CIA and COINTELPRO at FBI. Back in the Nixon times,
mm-hmm. Yeah. If I
and before answer, that, and before that, it was Shamrock all the way back to World War II.
That's right.
Go ahead.
If I could add something here, you know, Ed Snowden revealed the information showing that we were inches away from what he called turnkey tyranny, and that's exactly what Bill has been discussing here. Now, when Ed Snowden revealed all this information, making it possible, by the way, for people like Bill Binney, Tom Drake, Kurt Wiebe to talk openly about these programs, you know, he gave them the slides that showed NSA, you know, how they monitor things, how they can trace things. So Ed Snowden did a wonderful service. Now, what's my point here? My point is that when Snowden revealed all this, the common American reaction was, "Oh, gee, you know, there's no sweat off my back. I don't have anything to hide." You know, and you know, it was a wonderful thing. Somebody thought, "Well, this is what the Stasi did in East Germany. Let's ask a Stasi colonel what he thinks about this reply. I have nothing to hide." So they asked Wolfgang Schmidt, okay, his real name, a Stasi colonel, and Wolfgang said, "This is very naive to say you have nothing to hide. You don't get to decide what you have to hide. It is the government that decides that. The only way to prevent this information from being used against you is to prevent it from being collected in the first place."
Wow. That was better than Robert Shaw in The Longest Day.
Well, he also said, Ray, if you remember, he also said that, reflecting on the NSA surveillance program, he said, "For us, this would have been a dream come true."
You got it, yeah.
And you know, So, I mean, you know, that's the... And I would also add that, you know, Goethe had a good quote that I think Colleen uses on the end of her email, where he said, no one is more hopelessly enslaved than those who think they are free. And I'm telling you, that's the state of our country right now.
Yeah. We're going to get back into that. Gentlemen, I hope you can stay with us. We do have to take a few minutes out right now to do a fundraising pitch, but this is a fascinating conversation. I hope your phones are charged because I'm charged up. This is a great conversation. Can you stay with us a little longer?
Sure, I can.
Both of you? All right, so guys, stay right there. This is an epic program. We're at WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm going to turn it over to Tony Bates, and we'll be back with William Binney and with Ray McGovern.
And to your point there, Mr. Binney, we'll just, first of all, let me tell people how to pledge their support for this station. This is WBAI, folks. It is community radio. It is listener-sponsored radio. Let me explain what that means. Voices like these do not get a say in the media. I mean, we see Mr. McGovern on media from time to time, but not in long form and not with the freedom to speak with the freedom he has here. You've heard from this conversation already. Your media is controlled either by being in bed with the CIA or by fear. That is not the case here at WBAI, and it's why you get this purity of message. And we need you now to go to the phones and support that we bring this information to you. This is fascinating today. This is powerful today. What an impactful program based on the news cycle today from the WikiLeaks today. That's what we're doing here. Pledge your support at 516-620-3602. You can pledge at the $25 level. You can pledge at the $50 level. But do stay tuned. We're going to be on with these guys for a little bit longer. And this information is crucial for you to understand. For me, it brings to the fore that most of what we're seeing in the media can't be trusted, and why a voice like this is so important. We spoke to Ralph Nader on this program a few months back, and he pointed out that he is still grounded from 2004 and the Al Gore situation. NPR won't have him back on the air. Haven't had him on since 2004 because they hold him accountable for what happened during that election. But his voice is heard here on WBAI, a Pacifica station here at Pacifica Radio. It is our mission, folks, to bring you the voices that can't be heard in other media, and that's what we're asking you to support. There is a film coming out called The Good American with Mr. Binney in it. It is a $100 pledge. It is one of the best documentaries I have ever seen. I can't wait for you to get a chance to see it, but we have it here before it's even out and about, and you can pledge at the $100 level for The Good American, A Good American, The William Binney Story. But we've also put together a very large pack for you, a $500 level pack. It includes that film with William Binney. It also includes the book The Gods of Money, Wall Street and the End of the American Century. It also includes Capitalism, a six-part series, and we're going to throw in a fourth item for you, and that is that $200 flash drive. We send you two of them. On top of that, we're going to include two passes to the Socially Relevant Film Festival, which is taking place in Chelsea at Cinepolis, which is at 260 West 23rd Street here in New York. That takes place from March 14th through the 16th. It's over a $900 value. You can pledge at the $500 level to receive that. All of those items, a $900 value for your pledge of $500 to this station. But what we do with that money is we take that $500 and we turn it into 50,000 watts of power. It's alchemy. It's magic. We stretch your dollars far here, but we make them impactful with programs just like this one. But we cannot do it without your support. The station has been here for 57 years, bringing you impactful, important voices like these. This is the cutting edge of the news today. And that's why these phones should be ringing right now in support of this station. 516-620-3602. We will accept your Discover card. We will accept your American Express. We will accept your Visa card. We will accept your MasterCard. But make a pledge of support to this program so that we can continue to cut the edges. So much to unpack here that we can't possibly get to all of it. There's so many questions to ask around this. Are we safe in any way? I think about the way that people use Skype, for instance. There's so much information about Skype being one of the items that's hacked. And if you think about the way people use these peer-to-peer, face-to-face videos, and you think you have nothing to hide, think again. 516-620-3602. Make that pledge. Empower us to continue to do this work, to continue to bring to you the very, very cutting edge. We often have these voices on this station first. Mr. Benny's voice was heard here. He doesn't get this kind of play in the media. Mr. McGovern doesn't get this kind of time in the regular media, but we will give them voice here because it's your station, not ours. It is your station. It is your financing that makes this station great. We do it together. We bring you this kind of programming. We ask that you, in return, pledge your support. The founder of this network, Lewis Hill, was a conscientious objector, and he did not hear anti-war voices in the media. He created this network specifically with the belief that if you gave people content that mattered, content that matched their perspective, that they would support it financially. We're asking you to go to your phones right now and do just that. 516-620-3602. Understand that if we had commercials on this station, we could not have this conversation. It would not be allowed. There'd be a program director running in here right now shutting this down because it would hurt his bottom line. This is the opposite. This helps our bottom line, but only when you pick up your phone and dial us at 516-620-3602. We need 10 more of you on the line. Just 2 minutes left in this hour. We need 10 people calling. Pledge for that $100 level. We'll send you out a Good American, the William Benny story. Pledge at the $200 level, and we will send you this flash drive that's called Voices That Change the World. It's 1,350 hours of voices just like these. The greatest voices in movements. Malcolm X, Dr. King, Molly Ivins, Gore Vidal, Ralph Nader, you name them, Howard Zinn, they're on this collection. You want to talk about a great collection? It's not just one of those. We're going to send you two of them for your pledge of $200. If you pledge at the $500 level, we're going to send you all of those items, along with Capitalism, a six-part series, as well as we're going to throw in two all-access passes to the Socially Relevant Film Festival, and that includes all of their panels, that includes their happy hours before the movies, and includes any of the films being shown, excepting those that are by invitation only. But we're going to throw in that $900 value for at the $500 level. There are some of you out there who can do that. Just about 30 seconds left. Give us a call, 516-620-3602. My name is Tony Bates. This is Live on the Fly with Randy Credico, your host who's sitting right here. We're going to take a quick station break and come back on the other side with William Benny and Ray McGovern. Thank you for listening and supporting WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Celebrate International Working Women's Day with WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, Wednesday, March 8th, for 24 hours from 12 a.m. to midnight. In 1908, women marched to demand better pay, shorter working hours, end to child labor, and voting rights for women. In 2017, women are still marching and striking to demand change, respect, and equality. Women will speak to health, immigration, labor, and equal pay. Beyond that, the creativity, the music and spoken word, the love, the heart, the energy of women. Come to the Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue to enjoy and network, listen to and perform at our live open mic from 2 to 4 p.m. And on the radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, March 8th, 12 a.m. to midnight, International Working Women's Day.
The WBAI Feminist Film Festival is back. It's happening on Saturday, March 11th at the Brooklyn Commons with a showing of She's Beautiful When She's Angry, arguably the best film made on the birth of the modern feminist movement. One reviewer called it both an essential document and a wildly entertaining ride. It's all here, from the Miss America pageant protest to women integrating men's bars to Witch, the women's international terrorist conspiracy from hell, and much more. Director Mary Doe will be present afterwards for discussion with guests and audience on the film and its relevance to where we are today. So join us on Saturday, March 11th at 7 p.m. at the Commons for a great Women's History Month event. For more information, go to WBAI.org. This is a benefit for WBAI, but no one will be turned away.
All right, there's my theme song. That was some pitch by Tony Bates. Gentlemen, are you still with us?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, great, guys. Thank you. I hope you have some time in that battery there, both of you. Gentlemen, we are talking with Ray McGovern, who is the founder of the Sam Adams Association for Integrity and Intelligence. And on the other line is William Binney, who is a recipient of that award, that prestigious award. What does the Sam Adams Association mean to you, William Binney?
Actually, it's a collection of intelligence professionals whom I view as having integrity and character and are willing to stand up and talk about the issues that affect this country in terms of intelligence production and try to keep the intelligence agencies of this country honest. And it's hard, I'll tell you that. But trying to make sense of things so that when they tend to go astray, that major mistakes don't get made, you know, by bad intelligence. I think that's really it's a group of people who are really trying to do the right thing for the country and make sure that the country stays on the right track.
Well, Ray McGovern, why aren't more people defecting and are not defecting, but coming out and blowing the whistle on the kinds of problems that they're having, the excesses, the same way Bill Binney did and Thomas Drake and others? Why aren't we seeing more at this point in time? There seems to have been a slowdown.
Well, until today, huh? In other words, we have been pushing for this very much, including Dan Ellsberg, who is sort of Sam Adams' associate emeritus. He has written many an article saying, hey, people, you know these things. It's time to speak out. Now, obviously, one contractor or two or three got that word and looked at Ed Snowden and saw him for what he is, the real deal, who took one oath and one oath only to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, Ed sacrificed a whole lot. Now, he still can't come home. He's holed up in Moscow, not for any fault of his own. But, you know, that's the mark of integrity. He is himself a recipient of the Sam Adams Award. As a matter of fact, four of us went to Moscow in October of 2013 to give him that award. Let me say a word about Bill Binney, because he doesn't like to brag or tout himself. When we gave Bill Binney the award 2 years ago in Berlin, we had Ed Snowden piped in real time, okay? And you know what Ed Snowden said? He said this: if there weren't Bill Binney, there would be no Ed Snowden. Wow.
Wow.
Now, what does that mean? That means that Bill started talking about these things to the degree he could in an unclassified way, testifying, being on every outlet that would let him, which were very few. And Ed saw that and said, you know, if that's the case, and Bill Binney can do that, and Tom Drake can suffer for 4 years of persecution, prosecution at the hands of crooked Department of Justice lawyers, you know, if they can do that, then I'm going to take a lesson from that. I'm not only going to take a lesson from the courage of Bill Binney, but the experience of Tom Drake. Now, what do you mean by that? Well, there was no way, given Tom Drake's example of what happened, there's no way that Ed Snowden could have achieved his mission if he didn't get out of Dodge. That is, if he didn't get out of Hawaii. And if he went east, he would have been caught.
Wow.
That's why he went to Hong Kong. He'd get into Hong Kong and maybe have a week or so of getting his material passed. Now, when we met Ed Snowden on October 7th, 2013, I was the first one in the door, and Ed said, Ray? I said, yeah, Ray. And then he looked behind me. There was Tom Drake. Now, I want to tell you, you can read people's minds when something this poignant happens. He looked at Tom Drake, and I could see what he was thinking, and I confirmed it later. He was thinking, my God, here is the guy whose example, the 4 years of persecution, prosecution he went through at the hands of the Department of Justice, he was the guy who made it clear to me that if I was to achieve my mission and remain some sort of chance of being safe, I had to get out of Dodge. And then I look at Tom Drake. He's saying, my God, I never thought, Tom, that anything good could have come from my experience. But this is good. It was just an electric moment.
Go ahead.
That's what we have in this collegial atmosphere of people who take an oath, realize that an oath supersedes any little promise to keep things that are dangerous to the national security secret. That's not to say promises aren't important. They are important, but a sacred oath is much more important. That's what Ed Snowden did. That's what Bill Binney did. That's what Julian Assange did, who is also an awardee of the Sam Adams Award. So I just feel very, very privileged to be in the company of these courageous people.
Well, you guys are all great guys. You know, getting back to Julian Assange, you just mentioned him. Here's a guy, he's been in that embassy now for 4.5 years, I believe. He's a journalist. The New York Times didn't get prosecuted back in the 70s with the Pentagon Papers. Why are they going after him? He is just a journalist. He's taking stuff and turning it over. Why are they targeting him? I'll ask both of you gentlemen. You go first, Bill Binney.
Well, I think it's because exposed dirty work. So, I mean, he's exposed any number of things like war crimes and what they really think about other countries and leaders in other countries and things like that. And that's the kind of stuff that that the people who are in power don't like others exposing. I mean, they like to think that they're kind of special, and that anything they think and do would it's like church lady, you know, on Saturday Night Live. They're sort of special, you know. They said everybody should excuse them for everything they do and not even mention it, you know, and just accept everything they say as the gospel.
He's done a great public service, not just here, but internationally, Julian Assange, and I consider him a hero. He's heroic. He's gutsy. He's got integrity, and he should be given a huge award by just about every organization on the planet. Ray McGovern, what is that oath that you took when you entered the CIA?
There's only one. I took it first as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. It's the same. I take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's exactly the same oath that Bill took, that Ed Snowden took. And we all take that very seriously. And when we come right down to it, that's why we're doing what we're doing. Because when the Constitution is being violated willy-nilly, not only the Fourth, but the First and the Sixth and the Fifth, we feel a duty to honor our oath. Now, with respect to Assange, there was a time 6 years ago when everybody and his brother and sister were calling Assange a terrorist, not a journalist, a terrorist. And on CNN, they had about 20 people call him a terrorist, and somebody probably said, hey, you ought to get somebody on to try to argue that he's not a terrorist. So they asked me. Don Lemon, who has gone on to bigger and better things, interrogated me. And I refer anyone who wants to see that 5 minutes. It started with Bonnie and Clyde, okay, terrorists here. And luckily I didn't know that when I went on. But 5 minutes, Don Lemon, Ray McGovern, CNN, Julian Assange, and you'll have it. Now, what do I say, Wallace? Well, why do they hate Julian Assange? Well, they hate him a lot. Now, could they hate him anymore? Yeah, today they hate him even more. Now, one of the things that happened here is that the New York Times decided to write
a major, major, big, big article with Joe Becker, Stephen Erlanger, Eric Schmidt, August 31st, 2016, and it's titled, How Russia Often Benefits When Julian Assange Reveals the West's Secrets. Okay, well, wow. They say American officials say Assange and WikiLeaks probably have no direct ties to Russian intelligence services, but the agendas of WikiLeaks and the Kremlin have often dovetailed. Well, let's look at that. People say, well, what's WikiLeaks' take on this? WikiLeaks doesn't have any take on anything. WikiLeaks has raw information in pristine, pure form, usually, almost always, published in exactly the same form, because as Julian Assange says, once you change a word, even if you delete a Social Security number, it's not pristine, pure. Now, in this case, the revelation today, to his credit, Assange showed himself to be flexible enough to redact, to expunge some of the real names of the people involved in this criminal activity. You know, people can figure out who it is. He doesn't have to name them. So there's flexibility in this, but only to protect people that Julian Assange didn't want to be the rat up against. So why these things dovetail? Well, could it be that Julian Assange is telling the truth, the pristine, pure documentary truth, like about about the DNC and Hillary Clinton? And that's why. You know, that's why. Well, could be. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what it is, and that's why they hate him so much. They hate him from another picture, as we used to say in the Bronx.
Well, Sam Adams Associates, published a piece a few months back categorically claiming that it was not the Russians that hacked the DNC, that hacked Podesta, that it was a leak. And I think both of you signed it, and maybe 15 others signed that publication. William Binney, you may have co-written it, Bill Binney. Are you with us?
Well, I think we kind of shared it. Ray did some too.
Right. And tell us about that.
Well, I mean, it was pretty obvious to me that it wasn't a hack, because any hack that came across the network would be known to NSA, and they wouldn't equivocate on who did it or where they were or where the data went or how it got there.
Right.
I mean, they have trace route programs and everything, watching all of that moving around the network worldwide, so there's no reason why they wouldn't have picked that up right away. And to have them equivocate as well, to our best estimate, this is the guys who did, you know. Well, that's just not consistent with their capabilities that have been exposed by Edward Snowden, and a lot of material that Edward exposed, dated material, some of it like the Fairview program, which is how they collect data inside the United States. There were about 80 some tap points there, but that was as of 2004. Now that's 13 years later, and they're much further along now than they were back then. But even back then, there was a lot of capability. So I just didn't buy into any of that. I mean, there should have been no equivocation whatsoever on anybody's part as to who did that. And there was. And so that told me that they didn't, that it wasn't a hack. It was an insider.
And I wonder why Ray McGovern, they keep kicking the can down the road. The intelligence community could just give us the proof that it was the Russians that did this. Why are they waiting so long? They've had months to do it. I'm waiting, you know,
well,
biting at the bit to get the conclusive evidence that it was the Russians. They could put this to rest if they would just give it to us.
Sure. Well, in the old days, like before Iraq, they would fabricate it. But that turned out not to be terribly successful. The reason they don't give, quote, the evidence, end quote, is because there is no conclusive evidence. Bill was saying from day one, and this goes back 5 months, 6 months now, that it was a leak. That is, that somebody took a thumb drive or something else, put it in their computer, downloaded this stuff, and gave it to Julian Assange physically. So it never went over the network. That was the insight that Bill had then, and all we've seen since then convinces us of that. Now, one thing that people don't really know is that the President Obama himself, 2 days before he left office, at a press conference with everybody there, somehow it was missed by the mainstream press, said, and I quote, the evidence is inconclusive as to how the conclusions of the U.S. Intelligence community address the notion of how this hacking got to WikiLeaks. And even the president in that sentence spoke of a leak, not a hack. So what I'm saying here is that here is Obama, 2 days before he leaves office, saying, we don't know. The intelligence community is inconclusive in its conclusions because it doesn't have any information about this wide gap between the hacking, so-called, and WikiLeaks. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you, number one, that the evidence is vastly insufficient, and number two, nobody picked up on that by the mainstream media. It fell to us to issue another memorandum, which we did, showing that the president himself admitted that the evidence is, quote, in his words, inconclusive, period, end quote.
So this seems like a huge battle for the American people. Is there any kind of way out of this? What do we see coming in the future, gentlemen?
If we move, as we're moving towards the Internet of Things, I mean, if you start putting everything you have on the Internet, like your phone or your refrigerator or all that kind of stuff, all of that is just more information that they can gather on you and give them greater capability to understand what you're doing and when you're doing it. And it also gives them, if you want to look at the reverse side of that as the attack side, they could also attack the computer in your car and do various things with that too, like shut it off or when you're traveling at 80 miles an hour on the highway or something, you know.
Michael Hastings?
Yes. Or
shut off your pacemaker or something like that, you know. It's a bad idea to connect to the Internet all of these things, that idea, period.
Exactly.
So in the future, we should stay away from that.
Go ahead, sorry.
Let me ask you this question. In watching the movie about your story, Mr. Binney, I observed, or it seemed to me, that was also the basis for the creation of Facebook. Is that correct in any way? At least the algorithms that you came up with seem to have been the basis for social networking in general. Can you speak to that? Am I mistaken about that?
The social networking concept is not really a new concept. It goes back over, probably about 150 years. Actually, it goes back to the Civil War in the U.S. The Pinkertons in Washington were watching people visit other people in the Washington area, and that's how they developed the spy network, the Confederate spy network in Washington. So it's the same thing. Social networking is the same thing. A visits B, or A calls B, or A calls C, or, and then you build your network up. And or A emails B. It's the same kind of concept. In World War II, the military, when Manuel Morse became the field communication system of the armies in Europe, they started doing what they call reconstruction net development. So then later on they called it contact chaining and various other things like networking and things like that, and then finally became today, it's called social networking. But it's really the concept that goes back almost 200 years.
So we're... Go right
I
ahead, Mr. McGovern.
Here for a second. Yeah, someone mentioned Michael Hastings. Was that you, Tony?
It was indeed. I mentioned Michael Hastings.
Yeah. Now, when you look at the capability of these things to take over your driving mechanism and make it go 90 miles an hour when it should only be going 25 miles an hour. Well, I have always looked at the car crash that killed Michael Hastings with great suspicion. And there's ample reason for that.
because he had written that terrible, terribly damaging thing for about one of those leading generals, McChrystal, and he was doing other things. He was exploring, I guess I can mention this, he was exploring Dick Cheney and others in this arena. So for those who don't know, he was going about 90 or 100 miles an hour in L.A., I think it was, and he crashed and he was killed. Now, there was no inquest. They didn't examine the body. So, you know, if you can take over this kind of thing, that's what you can do. I'm not suggesting there's any more evidence that I know of that this is what happened. But now this refreshes my memory about Michael Hastings, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, Tony.
It's a story that's never set well with me because I learned shortly after, and one of the other mechanisms that can be hacked is any anti-lock brakes on cars can also be hacked. And that was one of the reasons we were given for his car crash, is that his brakes went out. Mm-hmm. He was going exceedingly fast, as you bring up, and the brakes on the car went out. So after looking into that story, I discovered that any electronic brakes on any cars can be hacked via the internet and controlled potentially. This is something that we all need to be aware of, and this pervades the entire American daily life potentially, and not potentially, actually. And it gives a reason for, as you guys talked about a minute ago, nothing to be afraid of. You talked a while ago about nothing to be afraid of, or what. But the government decides that what you have to hide, what you have to be afraid of. And it's a really valuable and valid point, because the regular American who is going about their job day to day, but who may every now and then disagree with some policy, or who may have a position that isn't right for that region, some folks might worry that that is a way for us all to be under attack. It frightens me. Before we go further into this conversation, though, folks, we're going to take a quick moment to visit some audio from this same collection from the Pacifica Radio Archives from 1971. And it's Allende speaking here, I believe,
at the
UN. And we're going to hear just a couple of minutes of a clip that play into this subject matter. Just a moment, folks. We're going to come right back. You're listening to Live on the Fly with Randy Credico. My name is Tony Bates. We're on the line with William Binney and Ray McGovern, both whistleblowers, both American heroes from my perspective. And we're going to take this quick clip break and come right back to the conversation.
This morning, the Assembly will hear an address by the President of the Republic of Chile. I would request the Chief of Protocol to be good enough to escort His Excellency, Dr. Salvador Allende, into the Hall of the Assembly.
The world was shocked in July to learn of different aspects of a new plan of action which the IT&T itself submitted to the United States government. Plans to overthrow my government within a period of 6 months. I have in my briefcase the document, dated October 1971, which details the 18 points that made up this plan. It was proposed that there be a strangling of the economy, a sabotage of our diplomatic position, sowing social disorder and panic among the population, so that when the government was overthrown, the armed forces would be impelled to break the democratic system and impose a dictatorship. Gentlemen, before the conscience of the world, I accuse the IT&T of attempting to bring about civil war in my country, the greatest possible source of disintegration of a country. This is what we term imperialist intervention.
Lo que nosotros calificamos como intervención imperialista. Cientos de miles y miles de chilenos.
There are hundreds of thousands of Chileans who wished me Godspeed with fervor and warmth when I left my country, and they gave me the message that I have offered this World Assembly. I am convinced that you, representing the nations of the world, will understand and assess my words. In our faith in ourselves, what increases our confidence in the great values of humanity is that, and the awareness and confidence that those great valors will prevail. They cannot be destroyed.
That's from the Pacifica Archives, part of the thumb drive.
Voices That Change the World.
Yes. Boy, it's rather moving, Ray McGovern. You were working with the CIA at that time. Were you aware of what was happening in Chile?
And now, was it the Russians that handled that coup, or was it...
I like these guys. They both have a great sense of humor. Bill Binney and Ray McGovern have a great sense of humor.
With this topic matter, yes. We'd better have a sense of humor.
Yeah, you got it. Well, today, you know...
Well, if it's something bad, it has to be the Russians, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always the Russians are coming, the Russians are
yeah,
coming.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, we need a new Cold War so we could spend a few more trillion dollars on it, you know?
I want to say that, I'm thank you for bringing up that point, and we're going to come right back to you, Mr. McGovern, but for a year, I have been saying to my friends, we're being set up again to be put on a Cold War footing with Russia. Isn't anyone paying attention? But one of the things I recognize, I have a very astute friend in Los Angeles, one of our colleagues named Jonathan Alexander, and he made a very astute point to me, which was, they don't care if you remember it. They don't care if you know about the Russians. They're waiting for you to die. It's the new generation who doesn't remember that they can impose this new idea on, that the Russians are dangerous and there needs to be a Cold War and we got to build up a military against them. We've been through that, those of us who lived through that era. But this millennial generation wasn't there for that. They didn't see that. And so these same memes can be imposed again through media, and it's begun to work. I literally was sitting in a bar next to two guys in their 20s the other night, and I made a joke about communists. They turned to me quickly and said, "Communists are dangerous. What are you talking about?" And I was shocked. I was taken aback. Is it the 50s? What's going on here? We've been set up to again.
I mean, this is just another swindle, right? They're setting us up for another swindle.
And it's a swindle that will cost trillions, as it did the first time. And folks, you didn't make any money off of it, but the military-industrial complex...
I can't hear you. I lost your signal there.
Okay, but folks, you didn't make any money off of those trillions, but the military-industrial complex made trillions of dollars. And again, we're being set up to have the American people fleeced for war and for who knows what. But the potential is grand. This is the same meme that I grew up just outside of. I'm a little bit younger than that, but I remember that as a meme. I remember the communist thing being a bad thing. 20-year-old said to me recently, jumped on me for bringing up communism, and I was absolutely shocked. So, Mr. McGovern, can you again address this new footing that we're being guided toward?
Yeah, I guess the idiosyncratic thing today is that, to my knowledge, no one has blamed the Russians.
I mean, you mean in today's news cycle specifically?
Right.
Yeah, so far. Now, tomorrow maybe they'll come up with an answer. With respect to Allende and that unconscionable coup on behalf of AT&T and, the fascists, Pinochet and the rest of them, that was September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
1973, okay? Now, I was working on a very high publication, a very high-level publication that evening, the evening before, okay? And I was putting it to bed, and one of the very high-level officials of the CIA came down and said, "Now, Ray, that piece on Chile, don't change a word of it, okay? Don't change a word, okay? No matter what happens tonight, don't change a word of it."
Uh-oh.
Now, I thought that was really strange, because that's the only time that ever happened. Now, it was a pretty anodyne piece. It didn't say much, just there was trouble in Chile, right? So I didn't touch it, because there's nothing that came in until 6 o'clock, and then all of a sudden, we had a coup in Chile. Now, that shows the bifurcation here, the division between the analysis division at CIA and the operations division. The analysts are not told what's going on. If there's a coup, we don't know about it. Not even people working on the highest level publication. So, what am I saying here? Well, that was a coup, and everybody realized it. And Richard Helms, who is head of the CIA, and unlike Bill Colby, did the bidding of Henry Kissinger, no matter what it was, and fomented this coup. Now, what happened? Well, when Helms got sacked, Colby was one of the people that took his place. And when the evidence was being presented to Congress, Kissinger said, "Now, please, please, whatever you do, don't admit that the CIA did it, that Helms was responsible." Colby again said, "Look, I'm a lawyer. I pledge loyalty to the truth in the court, I'm going to tell the truth. Well, he went and told the truth. Now, what happened to Colby? He was ostracized. There was nobody talked to him except a few of us in the building, in headquarters building. And what he did was leading to an indictment of Gertrude Helms, his predecessor. Now, Helms came back, went to the court, and all these fancy lawyers got him to plead nolo contendere, which I understand means, yeah, I did it, but, you know, give me a break. So they fined him $2,000. Okay, guess what happens? He goes back to the big cafeteria that headquarters in Langley, and he's met with 200 cheering operatives. A couple of us analysts are lurking in the shadows, right? What did they do? They passed the hat, and they got $2,000 in 5 minutes. They thought he was a hero. Why? Because he lied to Congress. Why? To keep the secrets. Now, of course, we all know what happened now, but that's an indication of how the operations part of the CIA really rules the roost. And when Colby violated that ethos, if you could call it that, he got into real, real trouble, got fired by Kissinger, and he came to what the Chinese call a no good end.
Is there a department in the U.S. government, is there a person who can stand up to this tyranny?
Well, Bill Binney, Tom Drake, Kurt Wiebe, all the people that I associate will do that, but we have no access to the kind of media that would inform American citizens that, hey, you're being had here. You're being fleeced. There's no reason. No reason to send extra troops and tanks to the borders of the Soviet of Russia. What Pope Francis said before Congress, and I like to quote this. This was a year and a half ago. He said, "You know, the real problem is the blood-drenched arms traders." Now, everyone stood up. Representatives and senators are like, oh, they applauded greatly, and then they looked in their vest pocket to see if the envelope from Lockheed was still there, or Raytheon. So there was the epitome of hypocrisy here. Here's the Pope saying, hey, this arms trade, this military-industrial congressional intelligence media complex is worse than Eisenhower ever expected, and yeah, you can applaud the Pope, but when he says these things, you ought to take them to heart instead of looking in your pocket to make sure that that check is still there.
You know, the new head of the CIA, Pompeo, actually did say that. He said that we have a military-industrial complex, and everybody, every congressman who has an arms dealer in their district wants that money. Bill Binney, did you get the kind of reception that Richard Helms got back in 2001? Or did you get the...
As a matter of fact, I didn't. But actually, I had the opportunity to go back in to visit, and I say, you know, they had old-timers day, and they bring us old-timers back in. And I was in the meeting with the director and the deputy director and a bunch of the seniors up at NSA, and you could clearly see there was like a 10-foot perimeter around me. There wasn't anybody in it. So, you know, it was that was the reception I got.
Well, let me ask you, William Binney, Tony just posed it to Ray McGovern. What's the solution at this point? What can we really do? Are we too far deep into it, or is there a way out?
Well, the way out is pretty simple. I mean, it's just cut their budgets.
Well, who's going to do that, though? Chuck Schumer?
Well, I mean, I think the president can do that. He's got control of the budget, right? It's his budget. If he doesn't want them to have the money, he could cut it.
What would be the impact on the White House at that point?
They would claim, you know, that they can't produce any intelligence. Well, I mean, I would ask, well, what good have you been so far, you know? I mean, what terrorist attack have they stopped? What Russian move militarily have they detected before it happened? You know, they haven't done any of that.
It's an important point to make, I think, as the media tries to convince us that they're making us safer. That this is happening and that's happening. I always go back to the point that you just made. They haven't caught a single terrorist. All of the terrorists that they've caught have been CIA plots, generally speaking.
Yeah, and you see, the reason I say that is because they didn't adopt the targeted approach that Thin Thread had. They took the bulk acquisition approach that they wanted because it took a lot of money to do it. And then what that meant was their entire set of analysts, all their analysts were buried under so much data, they couldn't see the threat coming in advance. It couldn't alert anybody, so they couldn't stop anything. So people died, and then they went in with all the afterward, found out who did it, and said, oh, here's all the data on them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like cleaning up the mess after the blood is all over the place. It's like, and that's why I said when I went to testify to the House of Lords in the UK, I said, bulk data collection kills people. Because you can't see the threat coming, the consequence is people die first, then you go clean up the mess.
You got that
what
right.
What it means is this is a swindle, another swindle from, and we've been swindled all along here. And it, what it means is, very simply put, is occasionally some of us have to die to keep the swindle going.
Right. Wow.
That's frightening.
You know, we talked about J. Edgar Hoover before, and his big contribution, of course, was fingerprints. Now, how many bank robberies were prevented from fingerprints? I don't know of any. Okay, now
Willie
could you
Sutton
catch,
never got caught that way.
Could you catch a guy if you got his fingerprint? Well, yeah, it was great to catch post facto, right? So this is the way it is with terrorism. You know, you collect all this stuff and you can sort it and you can retrieve it, but can you prevent a terrorist attack by this bulk collection? Give me a break. No way can you. It's a needle in a big yeah. haystack, you know?
Yeah, but in fact, that's the whole idea of intelligence is to predict intentions and capabilities of adversaries before they do them.
Right. It's not law enforcement.
That's the whole point of intelligence.
Yeah, you got it.
Right.
I would also add that when you pair the intelligence secret services and secret intelligence agencies with the police and the FBI and things like that, you get a secret police.
That's what you had with Occupy. You know, you mentioned Occupy before, Tony. Well, as you probably realize, not only were there mayors and all kinds of governors really anxious to prevent Occupy, but the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, Homeland Security, all these, in the Soviet Union, we used to call them the organs of oppression or the organs of state security. Now, they all got into these complex little joint centers, and they put the kibosh. They put the kibosh on Occupy. What was the result of that? Well, they got scared. And they drew up legislation which would allow the government to pick up Bill Binney, Ray McGovern, even you, Tony, or you, Randy, on suspicion of saying things that are somehow supportive of terrorism, and put us in places like Guantanamo. It's in the legislation. That's why Trump can draw on this legislation approved by Obama. It's called the National Defense
Authorization Act.
And you know, I don't want to exaggerate this. They couldn't put us away forever. The legislation says just until the end of the war on terror. Wow,
there are no more terrorists.
So that's on the books now, and that's what Trump can do if he decides to do it. He can blame Obama for it.
And we might point out that President
Section
1021, Obama
21, I believe.
And President Obama signed that legislation twice. And speaking of Occupy, we had at this station, given Occupy Wall Street their own radio show, we were screaming about that legislation. And I didn't hear much from the rest of the left. I was taken aback greatly by that. We let that happen on our watch by the guy that we elected. We put him in office and we said, we'll push him. Don't worry. We'll push him and we'll get him. He signed the National Defense Authorization Act and we sat on our hands. And it's an embarrassment to me. And on his way out of the office, he reinstated it again.
Not only that, he also allowed all of the information from the NSA to be shared with other law enforcement entities.
And we're
just on his way out, and he gave all of that power to Trump.
And so to take that to New York City today, there are ICE raids happening. We have a program called DACA where immigrants signed up so that they would be safe and gave all of their information to a government agency. It is apparent now that all of those people's names have been turned over to ICE, and that's the result of what we're talking about. That's how it's affecting New York City right now, today, in the age of T-Rump.
Wow. Gentlemen, this has been, an hour and 40 minutes with William Binney, who is the subject of a great documentary called A Good American. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I urge people to go see it. It opens up in Los Angeles. Executive producer Oliver Stone, when will that be happening, Bill Binney?
I think it's already available there. I'm not sure. You have to talk to the distributors or go on the web and Google it and see. I'm pretty sure it's opening up.
It's already open.
I think so.
And how did you do in Rome?
Actually, we got a fairly good reception in Rome, especially from the press over there. They didn't realize, of course, a lot that this was happening. Right after visiting Italy, we went to Brussels to show the movie and also give a discussion of how to do targeted approach to the European Union members. And we got a very good reception there.
Wow. Well, thank you for your service, William Binney. Thank you, Ray McGovern, for all the work that you've done, the two of you.
I want to also just jump in and say thank you to both of you as well. Mr. Binney, I have so much respect for you and your courage. And Mr. McGovern, you've been doing this for many years. Thank you both.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you both for being on the show. You guys were really wonderful. And we'll talk soon.
Okay.
William Binney and Ray McGovern, two heroes.
Absolutely. And folks, we're going to spend some time now raising money in support of this station. We're going to go back to a clip from Voices That Change the World. It's a $200 pledge of support. It is a collection of 1,350 hours of material from some of the greatest voices in the history of movements, in the history of Pacifica. We're going to go back to that House committee hearing and let you hear how far back we needed to be thinking about these sorts of problems. And now in the age of the internet, it's become an issue for all of us.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the national news services? And by that, I'm referring to AP and UPI.
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
Mr. McClory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to welcome
Robert McClory, a Republican from Illinois. These are the House intelligence hearings from Washington.
Delighted I am at the news reports that you are willing to remain on for a while as the Director of Central Intelligence and head of the CIA. And I want to state very forthrightly that I think the cooperation that you have provided, the information you provided through your testimony and through the cooperation you provided through your agency has been invaluable insofar as the work of this committee is concerned. And I commend you for it. And I want to personally express my appreciation to you for the very professional, the very high level, and a very cooperative way in which you have behaved as a public official and one who is responding to extensive inquiry by this select committee of the Congress.
Sorry.
With respect to the subject of detailees, I have in my hand a document which I understand has been declassified and which you may have before you, and if you permit, I would like to ask you questions about it. It relates to political aspects of an individual who was assigned to the National Security Council staff. And I would like to confirm, first of all, that has been declassified.
Yes, Mr. McCrory.
The person's name is Chester Cooper. Was Chester Cooper in 1964, while serving as Assistant Deputy Director for Intelligence for Policy Support, in the Central Intelligence Agency, assigned to the White House as a detailee?
He was a CIA employee who was assigned to the White House, to the National Security Council staff, I believe.
And he worked at the White House with Mr. McGeorge Bundy on the national security matters, and during that time he also participated in drafting campaign speeches on international issues which were delivered by President Johnson and by other senior officials.
As a member of the NSC staff, he primarily worked on intelligence matters related to the Vietnam and Chinese affairs, which was his specialty at the time. During that period, he did assist in the drafting of certain speeches by the president.
And he also participated in the preparation of a fact book which on national security and other matters which was used by the Democratic National Committee.
That is indicated by this report, Mr. McCrory, and I don't contest it.
Does the report also indicate that Mr. Cooper was the individual who in 1964, and I think this was ascertained as late as 1973, that he was the individual who was getting advanced copies of candidate Senator Goldwater's speeches and delivering them to the, I guess, Democratic personnel, President Johnson, before Senator Goldwater was delivering the speeches?
I believe there was an arrangement at that time, Mr. McCrory, by which somebody picked up the copies of Mr. Goldwater's speeches, which had been made available in advance distribution for the press, and brought them to him. They picked them up at the Republican headquarters.
Now, at this time, the director of the Central Intelligence was Mr. McCone. Is that correct?
Yes.
Who was Tracy Barnes?
Mr. Tracy Barnes was the chief of the Domestic Operations Division, which was a division which was responsible for certain of our foreign intelligence activities here in the United States.
And this memorandum indicates that he's the one that arranged this this activity of Cooper.
It does.
Where's Tracy Barnes now?
Mr. Barnes unfortunately died several years ago.
Now, how do you regard this kind of activity on the part of a detailee, Mr. Colby?
I think, Mr. McCrory, this was on the edge somewhere of what he should have been doing and what he shouldn't have. Working in the National Security Council staff, I'm sure he was providing his experience and his assistance to the National Security Council and to the president in that position.
Well, even though we regard the president of the United States, whoever he happens to be, as the one who is in charge of the National Security Council and of the intelligence community, it would not be appropriate. Would it be, in your opinion, for a CIA employee to be getting advanced copies of speeches by an opposing candidate and delivering them to the president?
I think that was improper, Mr. McCrory, no question.
And you're listening to Live on the Fly with Randy Credico. My name is Tony Bates. I am programming manager here at WBAI. That clip that you just heard is from the Church Committee, and it points out, it highlights the fact that the media is co-opted and has been for a very long time, folks.
Since the Civil War.
I really don't believe a thing they say. But what strikes me, Randy, you know, I once said on Facebook to my friends, I said, look at our posts. You want to talk about mind control? We're already mind controlled. Everything we're talking about came from CNN or Fox. We're not. Right. We don't have any original ideas here. Everybody's talking about exactly what they saw on CNN.
They're all reacting to Don Lemon. They're all reacting to Jake Tapper or Rachel Maddow. That's the scope. That's the parameter of what's given us.
Absolutely. And so instead of original thoughts, we are discussing what the controlled media is giving us. And that's the importance of Pacifica Radio Network.
Wouldn't they love to do something like this? Don't you think deep inside some of these reporters are making $300,000, $400,000 a year would rather do something like this, which is real news?
No, because they're making $300,000 or $400,000 a year. 516-620-3602. WBAI needs to make $500,000 or $600,000 a year. And we do that, folks, by relying on you, asking for your support. No, I really don't believe that they want to do that. But we do have people like the wonderful host that we used to have, her name Esther Armagh, who was a BBC trained reporter, and who said to me repeatedly, I can get another job in media. Indeed, I've been offered other jobs in media. However, I get to cover the stories that I like here at WBAI. I get to cover the stories that matter to me and my community. And that's why this station, folks, is so important and why we can't let it go and why we have to sustain it. Make a pledge of support now. The clip that you just heard is from Voices That Change the World. It is a 64-gigabyte flash drive with 1,350 hours of material.
That's 65
just
days.
Like that, folks.
Straight.
55 days of listening.
65.
24/7. As my father would say, 24/7, you have to listen that long. But folks, we're going to send you not one, but two. And the pledge level is just $200. You can call us at 516-620-3602 to make that pledge of support. We've got 5 minutes left in this hour. Let's get 10 of you on the line pledging at that level so that we can reach our goal for this hour. We've given you an incredible conversation with William Binney and with Ray McGovern, and it's your turn now. What is your part? Well, you didn't hear a commercial throughout this entire program, and that's because we rely on our listeners to sustain WBAI. Won't you do that now? You can pledge at the $25 level to be a basic member. You can pledge at the $50 level. There are some people out there listening, Randy, though, that can pledge at the $1,000 level. How about you pledge at that $1,000 level and we will send you out 10 of these flash drives. You can distribute them to your favorite school. You can distribute them to your favorite professor. You can distribute them to your community group, as so many people are meeting now. Since the election, people are meeting in their homes and taking action. Friends of mine who I've never known to be political or taking political action, and it may be your turn. 516-620-3602. That's the phone number to call. And one of my best friends, my very best friend, who Tracy, I almost called her by her maiden name, Tracy Clark, who she and her partner came up, or two of her partners came up with firethefool.com and Fire the Fool on Twitter. That page gained 60,000 subscribers overnight, literally in 24 hours, because people are so impacted by this presidency. People are taking action, folks. This station's been taking that action for 57 years, and we've been doing that with your pledges of support. Do that again now. Make that pledge of support. Take out that MasterCard, that Visa card, that American Express, whichever it is. Make a pledge of support for this kind of content. You know, Randy, I hear from people saying, I don't want to hear about this and that. You got this thing on the air that I don't like and that thing on the air. Well, here's the thing, folks. When you hear the content that you do like, you have to support that.
Right.
And then we give you more of that. The more you support this kind of program, the more you get to hear it during these fundraising drives. You know, Randy, when I was just a listener to Pacifica Radio, to public radio, I used to wonder why we only got the best content during the fundraisers. Like, what's going on? We don't hear any of this stuff regularly. But on this program, we get to cover these topics on a regular basis. Live on the Fly with Randy Credico brings you this kind of cutting-edge material with these kinds of cutting-edge guests every Tuesday at 5 p.m. And we're asking that you send your support to this station to continue that great WBAI tradition of muckraking, that great WBAI tradition of questioning the mainstream, and that great WBAI tradition of being on the cutting edge. That's what we do on Live on the Fly. 516-620-3602.
Tony, there are a variety of premiums that we are offering. Why don't you enumerate those?
You almost made me curse in Spanish. I was going to say ayun, but there's a lot. We'll say it that way. but we'll say there's a lot of them. But what we've got is this $200 flash drive on the table. We've also got the one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. And I am not kidding you, folks. I love this film. And it's called A Good American, The William Binney Story. William Binney was just our guest. This is a brave man who worked for the NSA, who created algorithms that just understood how the enemy moves. And through his algorithms, his colleagues, well, he left after he realized the U.S. government was going to spy on Americans. He quit his job because he's a person of integrity. Does that exist in America anymore? He left back in 2001. His colleagues who went forward and were able to prove that they had the movements of the 9/11 hijackers in a computer program. It could all have been stopped potentially, but the NSA shut that down. That movie is called, once again, A Good American, The William Binney Story. It's a pledge of just $100, but we've got a gigantic pack, the Best of Fun Drive pack, we call it, on the table. The Best of Fun Drive pack is a $500 pledge of support. It includes both of those items, along with Capitalism, a 6-part series, and the book, The Gods of Money, Wall Street, and the End of the American Century. Not only that,
what
we're
is that
give
called?
You,
what's that?
That is the book. That book, that's the title. It's called The Gods of Money, Wall Street, and the End of the American Century. And it is a book about capital and how it's manipulated to support the elite. Also, though, if you pledge at that $500 level, we're going to throw in a pair of all-access passes to the Socially Relevant Film Festival, which takes place on March 14th through the 16th at Cinepolis. It's a brilliant film festival which tells the stories of everyday people like you. Tell stories that, like we tell on WBAI. That's why we are proud media sponsors of that event. For a $500 pledge of support, that's over a $900 value. And don't forget that flash drive that we're offering, and we're going to send you two of those. We're going to send you the book, the other DVD by William Benny, the DVD collection, Capitalism, a six-part series, and all access passes, not one, but two. Pledge at that $500 level now. Because of the tickets, we ask that you pledge on your credit card at 516-620-3602. Thank you for listening to Live on the Fly with Randy Credico, and thank you for pledging in support of WBAI. Please keep those calls coming, and thank you.
Fighting, but what are you fighting for? Read your morning papers, read every single line. And tell me if you can believe that simple world you find. Read every slanted word till your eyes are getting...